Starting. Oh, we're all live.
This is
on
live. This is live. Excellent.
This is the best day when things go somewhat to plan. So, guys, I'm joined by Rosie Sexton. In case you don't know who Rosie is, I would call her a pioneer of UK MMA. She's fought in just about every MMA competition that she could fight in, I think. So you've got UFC, we've got Bellator, we've got Bodog. Should probably talk about that nasty leg break, which was going viral as well. Rosie, I mean, she's an incredible competitor. I remember coming up in the jiu-jitsu, in that kind of MMA, and everyone was talking about like how good Rosie was. And it was cool. We met at a few events down the line, so it's been great kind of seeing her grow. And now she's kind of gone into the, she's done a huge amount of stuff, but going into the, osteopath kind of world. And she's making some great strides in there. So let's dive in. I'm going to switch over to Rosie. Hopefully that was a good enough intro for you, Rosie. Is there anything you'd like to add?
No, that's cool. That's cool. Like I said, at the moment, my big thing at the moment is putting broken fighters back together again, which I kind of see it as completing that circle. You know, it's the other side of the coin, that sort of, you know, fighter, warrior, healer kind of, you know, updated for the 21st century. That's sort of what we're aiming for, you know, 21st century of reboot of Mr. Miyagi. That's kind of how we're pitching this.
It comes back to my fly flying around and me trying to grab it out of the thing.
Yeah. Haven't mastered that one yet.
That's cool. So you've give us a little bit of background on you're presently an osteopath, correct? Working in a combat sports clinic.
Yeah.
Where's that based? That's Manchester, is it?
We're in Solihull. We've been here for a couple of years now. So
okay.
That's sort of where I work from. I mean, the idea with, because I run my own osteopathy clinic here.
Yeah.
The idea with combat sports clinic was to take some of that knowledge online, if you like, because I know for a lot of martial artists, grapplers, combat sports athletes, fighters, people can really struggle finding good advice about injury management that's applicable to them, because a lot of the time, you know, you can go to, you know, you pick a random physio off the internet and they might know their stuff as far as the human body goes, but when it comes to getting you back to your sport, they don't always have that that background. So what I've tried to do is to sort of answer some of the questions I get asked all the time by the guys I train with, by, you know, the fighters who come and see me, and to put some of that information online and put some things out there so that people can help themselves as well.
That's awesome. I know from my experience, it's always been a thing. If I can find someone who's done a little bit of jiu-jitsu or anything like that, it makes the world of difference in terms of them just understanding like the rigors of what your body's put through, but also where the stress is and the stress points tend to come from as well. So it's an amazing resource to have as well. So let's dig into a couple of things then. The first thing, I guess, what are like the most common injuries that you see typically in jiu-jitsu and grappling? That's my first question. I think if once we understand that, then it's easier to move forwards, really.
Sure. I mean, with grappling, I see a little bit of everything, actually. There's a really wide range of things that people come in with. I mean, if I'm looking at a top five, perhaps, lower backs are always a common one, particularly in people who play a lot of guard, who spend a lot of time flexed, spend a lot of time playing bottom position.
Mm.
I think lower backs can be a real big issue for some of those players. So that's probably number one, or close to number one. Neck injuries are another common one. I mean, I've got a big bee in my bonnet about necks at the moment. And I mean, this is one of the reasons that I've been doing some work on it, is because the number of people I see coming into my clinic with neck injuries.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time, by the time people have picked them up, by the time people get to me, they're already at a stage where things are quite bad. And this got me thinking, well, we could be doing more to prevent this. So that's, we'll get more onto that later.
Okay, cool.
But yeah, so necks is that's another one. Shoulders, I see a lot of general rotator cuff grumbliness the bucket I'll put that in. And I mean, that can range from anything from a minor niggle to something quite serious.
Okay.
So you see the whole spectrum with those. I mean, sometimes you get impact injuries with shoulders as well, when somebody's sort of fallen on a shoulder or fallen on an elbow. And again, you know, that falls into that same bucket.
Okay.
So then knees would have to be in there. Obviously, you know, you've got your non-contact knee injuries, so things that just happen in the course of, I mean, it can be anything, like warming up even. Yeah. I've had people come in, but they've injured their knee doing jumping jacks in a warm-up. And obviously, you know, with things like leg locks, heel hooks, things like that, especially with that being so popular at the moment, I'm seeing a bit of that sort of coming through my door. Not as often as you might think, but again, there's a fair few of those. And again, sometimes they can be quite nasty when they do happen. So,
Of course. I mean, that's serious injuries with knees, right? Well, I guess all these are relatively.
I mean, your ACL rupture is the standard one that, again, I see still too often. But the thing with knees is they can be quite varied, because there's a few different, you've got four major ligaments in the knee. You've got the meniscus, you've got the patella at the front, so you've got that sort of patellofemoral pain. So there's quite a variety of different things you get with that. And then five, it's probably a tie between either ankle sprains or elbow issues, sort of tendinitis at the elbow.
Yeah, okay.
This elbow, golfer's elbow, those sort of presentations. So those are the things that I see most often, I think.
Is there a thing that you see that's like typically causing these things? For example, is it that it's poor body control? For example, I just had a guy, one of my brown belts, guy jumped close guard on his knee and tore his MCL, LCL and the meniscus. So is it that kind of thing where it's kind of carelessness, or is it more like a repetitive use thing, or is it more of a long-term problem that people are just putting themselves
in? It's some and some. I mean, you always see the odd sort of freak accidents, you know, something happened and there wasn't an injury there before, and then all of a sudden there is, you know, that the sort of acute traumatic type injury. So you see some of those. They tend to be a minority, I think. Okay. I think more of what I see tend to be the longer term chronic stuff that builds up over time. So when I talk to people about what happened, probably more often than not, they'll say, well, it wasn't one particular thing, or maybe there was one particular thing, but it had been bad for a while before that. And then something just tipped it over the edge and made it worse. So that's, I would say the most common ones we see are the repetitive things. So tendinopathies, that's a classic one.
Yeah.
I mean, in terms of spinal issues, like I say, I see a ton of lower back problems. Yeah. And again, I think that's particularly to do with the mechanics of jiu-jitsu.
Yeah. We spend a lot of time hunched over, right?
This is it. We're spending a lot of time in loaded flexion.
Yeah.
Now, so the almost the traditional view on this is that you shouldn't be loading your spine in flexion. It's like when people, you know, if you see somebody deadlifting really badly in the gym and they're putting a lot of weight on a flexed spine, typically that is one of the common places where you'll often see injuries. When you think about it, that's what we're doing a lot of the time in jiu-jitsu. When, you know, when you've got a heavy guy on top of you in closed guard and they stack you up and then sprawl their weight into you, you're loading your spine in flexion. So to some extent, that is a problematic position. Now, there are things you can do to strengthen that and to prevent problems. And again, this is something I spend a lot of time working with athletes who have had back pain, working on that with them. But again, it's one of those things where it's a bit difficult, because we're never going to completely avoid those positions, obviously, because they're part of the sport. So we have to train the body to deal with it better.
Okay, so I guess for you then, the people that you see is like almost the end result, where they've got to the point that they're broken and now they need to be fixed, which is always the point that people suddenly want to do something about it. No one likes the prehab side of things, because it's not particularly exciting.
Absolutely. this is it. It's a, can you fix me by Saturday? Yeah.
I've got a comp on Saturday. Can I fix you?
I'll be all right, won't I?
Fine, I can do that. Yeah, no. Going like really far back in that sequence, then I guess the kind of first problems or first issues or things that you can do to prevent that, what would be kind of some generic advice that people could start implementing, you know, as soon as possible, so that they don't end up at, like, you know, down the line having to come and see you or whatever?
Yeah. So, I mean, one of the big things that I have is, and I'll always encourage my fighters and my grapplers to do some form of strength training. Now, it doesn't necessarily have to be a lot. You know, I'm not saying that you should replace all of your jiu-jitsu sessions with sessions down at the gym, but I think doing, I mean, generally, I'll aim for a couple of short sessions in a week, with sort of a general all over strength plan that covers your bases. So looking at, you know, looking at major movements. So things that, I mean, things like, you know, your squats, your deadlifts, a push, a pull. So again, without necessarily getting too in depth, but just doing a baseline level of strength work, I think makes a huge difference. Yeah. And I notice this a lot with the guys who are more injury prone tend to pick up more issues. They're almost always the ones who are not doing a good strength plan. Yeah. So I think that's the first thing that I would say.
The next obvious question that people are going to say is, like, how long should this, how much, you know, they don't want to impede their jiu-jitsu time.
Yeah, absolutely.
Is it just about doing something? Like, you know, if you went in and just, because I'm working with Jamie at the moment, and he's just got me like 15 minute sessions.
Yeah.
Massive benefits to that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I can do them regularly. I can do them consistently, which is super important. And I can get like one or two of the major lifts out. And then I can do them pretty much every day because they're so short that I'm not drained and I can still go in and train. I can still do all those kind of things as well.
Yeah. I mean, I think this is a great approach for people that are training for another sport. So, I mean, what I'll look at doing is either doing maybe two sessions in a week or splitting it down, as you've done, into shorter sessions more often. It's one of those things where I think the 80-20 rule applies. Yeah. You know, I think you can get the majority of the benefits from doing a relatively small amount of work, but the difference between some and none is massive.
Yeah.
So again, I mean, I'd say, you know, even if you're just picking a few big lifts, like I said, I mean, I love deadlifts. For grapplers, the deadlift is absolute king of exercise. I think that makes such a difference because you can hit, you know, you're working grip, you're working lower back, you're working legs, glutes, you're working shoulder girdle, so that's stability through the upper back and the scapula. So I think, I mean, in terms of bang for your buck, that's one of my absolute favorites.
Isn't it something like 80% of the muscles are worked in a deadlift or something crazy like that?
Right? Like I say, it's a really, really good exercise. And again, this is one of my things for people with lower back issues, I will often try to get them do it deadlifting.
Okay.
Some variation of a deadlift. Now, obviously, if that's an acute lower back problem, if it's quite a bit, we'll be careful how we do that. I'm not necessarily talking about walking into the gym and picking up the bar with 200 kilos on it. You know, sometimes we'll start with a fairly light kettlebell and just get them doing the movements, for example. But I think doing some form of deadlift, and again, it might be a full deadlift, it might be a Romanian deadlift, it might be, I mean, even things like, you know, your single leg RDLs and things like that, they fit in there as well. So we'll find the right variation for that person. And I mean, obviously, if somebody's got lower back is resilient enough, and, you know, building it up so that they're doing a full deadlift, I mean, has an awful lot of benefits. So that's something that I will often work on with my grapplers, particularly those who have a history, because there's a particular sort of almost body type that you see, people who are fairly tall, fairly lanky, fairly bendy.
Yeah.
And you walk in, you say, you play a lot of guard, don't you? And they'll go, yeah. And usually they're commonly the ones who get lower back issues because they're spending a lot of time using that lower back flexion they've got, which often works really well for them when they're playing that guard game, until all of a sudden it doesn't anymore because it starts hurting. And that's when we start saying, well, actually, we need to get those extensors stronger so that they're supporting the back better in that position. You're not relying so much on your ligaments, on the passive structures of the spine, which are more easily damaged.
Okay, cool. I've heard you talk as well about lunging as well being an important thing.
Yeah, Yeah, I mean, I love lunges as an exercise. I think, I think the single leg strength work, and again, you know, whether you, which variation you pick is up to you, whether it's a lunge or a split squat, or, you know, there's a whole series of progressions that you can use with those. But I think doing an asymmetrical lift with the lower body, it carries over very well into the kind of positions people are going to be in when they're using it. So when you're wrestling, for example, a lot of people are, well, most often we're in that split stance. So again, being able to having that effective level change,
yeah,
that's really important. And also, I think, I mean, again, it's one of these exercises where it hits a number of different joints. So I give this to people for knees, for hips, for lower backs. I think, you know, I think it can help with all of those issues. So
okay, so what about that's very much, we talked a lot about like kind of lower body, back and things like that. I know we talked to, you said one of the other things was shoulders were a problem, yeah. Rotator cuffs. What kind of general exercises can be done for that? Is it going to be things like overhead presses, or are you going to be more like pull-ups, or what's going to be the thing
So I think shoulders can be a little bit tricky. Usually when somebody's got a bad shoulder, the first range that they start to notice that in is the overhead.
Yeah. Movement.
So when they're sort of overhead pressing, it'll start to feel a bit pinchy on the top, for example. So I think a lot of the time when somebody comes to me with shoulder pain, the first thing I will often do is take out that overhead movement. I'll say, let's just focus on the more of the horizontal movements first. So I think horizontal rows are really, really important. Again, they tend to be neglected. People tend to do more vertical pulls, so chin ups and yeah, that kind of thing, and not so much in the horizontal plane. So
you're talking about like laying on a bench and then rowing. Yeah.
Heavy dumbbell row, for example, or your even sort of recline rows off rings or a TRX.
Okay.
So I'll often get people doing those. Then what I'll tend to focus on is a good rotator cuff strength plan. So again, I mean, a lot of the time these people are getting pain either because there's a problem with the rotator cuff, so there's a problem with the tendons, or there's a bit of a tear or something like that going on. Or in some cases, it's just that the rotator cuff isn't adequately controlling the position of the shoulder. So the thing with shoulders is they're a trade-off. We've got a lot of mobility at the shoulder, but that means that the shoulder socket itself isn't very deep. And because of that, there's people more often get instability at the shoulder than anywhere else. And because of that, it's really important that this rotator cuff, this group of muscles around the shoulder, controls the position of that shoulder joint. So one of the things that I'll work with people on is doing a lot of rotator cuff strength work. Again, if somebody's in a lot of pain, we have to be careful how we do that without flaring it up. But then once we get them out of pain, it's into building that up and giving them heavier loads. I mean, one of the things that I find grapplers tend to have a problem with sort of standard physio exercises sometimes. And I think one of the biggest complaints is they're not really hard enough. You know, people sometimes don't put enough load on those exercises, and that can mean that they're not getting the benefits that they should be from those exercises. Oh, I've lost sound.
I've got my fly buzzing around, so I'm muting my mic, and then I just forgot to turn it on. So what I was going to ask, is that more of a psychological type thing? So that even though they're using a relatively small weight, they're still getting the benefit of it, but then they don't feel like they're actually doing anything because they're working such small kind of
muscles. To some degree, that's true. And I think the other side of that coin is that to some extent, some physios just don't load things heavily enough. I mean, one of the gripes I have with people in my line of work, so I mean, by that I include physios, osteopaths, sports therapists, you know, all of us are treating sports injuries. I think sometimes the trouble is when you go and see somebody who's not an experienced sports person themselves, I think their perception of what constitutes an exercise is a bit different from when you speak to somebody who's an athlete or a serious sports person. And I mean, I see physios prescribing things, you know, you're going to do 300 leg extensions with no weight. It's like, but why would you do that? I'm forever telling my guys, you know, if it doesn't feel like you're doing anything, or if this is really easy, we need to make the exercise harder. You know, you should always get to the end of the exercise feeling like you've done something. If it doesn't feel like you're doing anything, you probably aren't. And I think, again, finding the right exercise for the person is a real key there. It's sort of making sure that we can progress or regress the exercises to find that sweet spot for them.
Okay, cool. So, the other thing that's going to come up would be flexibility for jiu-jitsu and more. Because, you know, strength, a lot of people perceive strength, if you're going to be lifting and whatnot, you're going to get like unflexible effectively. And there's so much of a movement in jiu-jitsu about, like, you know, you want to stick your legs behind your ears and be able to suck your toes or whatever. Do you believe that? Do you think that it needs to be worked additionally?
I think a good strength plan will also improve flexibility.
So you come through something like range of movement and whatnot.
I mean, for example, my favorite way of improving hamstring flexibility is Romanian deadlifts.
Okay.
So by loading the hamstrings eccentrically, you'll actually find that you'll get a better improvement in length than you will by just static stretching. Eccentrically, I mean you're lowering the weight under control.
Yeah.
So with a Romanian deadlift, you're lowering that weight down to the end of range, the hamstring. So the limiting factor is usually when you get that pull at the back of your legs, where it feels your hamstrings are at full stretch. And we're actually loading that end range of movement for the hamstrings. And by putting load on the muscles when they're at or near the end, that end range, that can actually be a very effective way of improving mobility. And not only does it improve mobility, but it improves your functional mobility. So it's the range of movement that you can actually use. So it's all, like I say, it's all very well being able to, you know, I've got some patients who come and see me, super flexible around the shoulder. They've got loads of movement, but they haven't got control of that movement. So when the joint gets towards end range, it all goes a little bit floppy and it doesn't.
There's no use, basically.
That's it. They haven't got the control there. And that isn't useful flexibility. So useful flexibility in grappling terms, that's the range that you can control. And that's why I think actually putting load on joints towards those end ranges is a really good way of improving it. So that's something I'll work on with people. Yeah, so we'll try and work the two things together. So it's not either strength or flexibility.
Yeah.
We're targeting both.
I mean, I guess when you see like those strongman type people that are doing like full splits and whatnot, and you know, sorry. Rosie?
Yep.
Sorry, my fault entirely. That's my phone went off. To my laptop. Problems of live streams. So I guess when you see like what I'm saying is that the strongman people, you see them like doing full splits and stuff like that.
Yes.
That's part of that working to the full range of movement. I guess with most exercises, you can do that. You often see people like doing like half a squat and whatnot, as opposed to getting to the full grip. Do you, are there any problems associated with going into a full deep squat? Or is that just one of those myths that's been told over and over again?
Yeah, I mean, to some extent, yes. I think this is one of those things where individual mileage varies. You know, I think people are built differently, particularly when you start looking at, I mean, the hip is a classic example of this. The hip joint can actually vary in shape quite a lot from one person to another. So you have some people who can get that depth and they're absolutely fine. And you can, you know, you can load the squats at the full ass to grass, as people like to say. And they have no problems. And then you can have somebody else who, when they try and do that, they start getting all sorts of problems. So this is something that I really will address on an individual basis. In general, I don't see any problems with doing a full depth squat. It's kind of old school thinking. There was a phase people went through where going, oh, you shouldn't squat all the way down, it's bad for your knees. Yeah. I think that's been pretty much disproved in general. However, there are some individuals for whom I wouldn't go straight there. So if somebody does have knee problems, for example, then we might want to start by taking that bottom range out and then gradually improve that with either a lightweight or maybe even just body weight. Like I said, there are people who I won't load a full squat at the bottom range just because it's not appropriate for them. But in general, if you've got healthy knees, you don't have any problems with it, I don't think there's any reason to think that you're going to mess yourself up by doing that.
Is that going to be something that your body kind of tells you about? For example, if you're like, you know, you're going down in a squat and you're feeling pain, then you're maxing out the maximum depth that you have.
Yeah. So I mean, in general, I mean, actually, the body will give you very good feedback if you actually listen to it. I think the problem we tend to have as grapplers is that a lot of the time we're trained to ignore what our body's telling us.
Yeah.
We sort of, you know, but I think when you pay attention, you know, your body will let you know. It's like, this doesn't feel good. This doesn't feel right. Yeah. And that's always a signal. My point of view, back off a little bit, just stop there. Let's maybe deload it. We'll take some of the weight off. We'll have a look at that movement. We'll see if we can. So it may not be that you can't do that at all. It may be that we need to think about how you're doing it. Maybe okay. We change your mechanics slightly, for example.
Okay. Cool. Okay. So I guess just to kind of recap a little bit, we've talked a little bit about the major injuries that you see being lower back, neck, knees, elbows, / ankles and rotator cuff, right? And then we've talked a little bit about the one of the best prehab things you do is your strength exercises, and then trying to work the range of movement in those strength exercises to help with the flexibility and usable strength, I guess, or usable flexibility as much as anything else. Okay, perfect. Is there anything? I don't want to get in too specific because I know it's incredibly personal to the individual. Is there anything else that you would advise that people do to kind of at day one to prevent any injuries from happening? Is there supplementation benefits? You know, is there anything you can do like that?
So I don't particularly advise on supplements. Mm-hmm. I think there are some supplements that may give some benefits for some people. In general, when it comes to nutrition, I'm very much fan of keeping it really simple. Somebody on the thread actually was asking about digestive issues in grapplers. I said the biggest digestive issue I see with grapplers are these fad diets.
Yeah.
Most digestive problems are caused by somebody listening to something on Joe Rogan or... Yeah. I mean, no offense to Joe Rogan, but, you know, or a similar podcast, something's come up and all of a sudden it's all about that. That's the next big thing. You know, we're going to go on a meat only diet and all of a sudden your digestive system is doing something like, you know, you throw it into a completely different environment from what you're used to. And then you start getting issues. So yeah. I think this is something you see a lot. And I think it's sort of symptomatic of the fact that people like to have simple answers to questions.
Yeah.
People like to have, you know, that somebody come along and go, this is the big thing. This will fix all your problems. You know, I think it's CBD oil at the moment, you know, it'll cure cancer. It'll do everything. Just take this, everything will be fine. And again, people buy into it 3,000%. And sometimes that can cause problems of its own. Yeah. Like I said, especially with things like nutrition and supplements, when these things, I mean, they can have side effects, you know?
Yeah.
So, I mean, with all of these things, sort of taking it with a pinch of salt, and kind of, again, my attitude to diet is sort of the old advice of eat food, not too much, mostly plants.
Works pretty well, right? That's exactly what Mike
said. That works pretty well for most people. And I mean, again, sometimes some people will need to tweak what they're doing or something, but keeping it simple works pretty well.
Keep it simple, stupid. It's always the best way, right?
Yeah. I mean, the old stuff that's been around for ages, it's been around for ages for a reason.
Yeah.
And a lot of the time it's because, you know, fundamentals work really well. It's the same as, you know, as you know, with jiu-jitsu itself. People always want the new fancy technique, or, you know, you're spinning, flying, throwing omoplata, the heel hook, yeah, whatever. But most of what works, most, you know, what you're getting 95% of your results from are those fundamentals. And yeah, if you do the fundamentals well, that will take care of most things.
Yeah.
Then you can look at, you know, what you need to get the, you know, when you're looking at, you know, the difference between being number five in the world and being number one in the world. Yeah, sure, we can look, yeah, at tweaking these extra bits and pieces, but make sure you've got the fundamentals in place first. And that's a big thing.
Cool. Okay, let's dive into some questions from the group. So Margot was asking, what's your idea of complete practice? I think it's to do with, I feel that the typical competitor lifestyle in BJJ is very incomplete. What would you suggest is the most suitable format for training as a full-time athlete, is schedule versus intensity and that kind of thing?
I think, I mean, this is an interesting question, actually. This got me thinking this morning when I was reading this. I think the idea of completeness is, it's tricky, because to be the best in the world at any one thing, you have to be quite one-dimensional. You have to be have quite a narrow focus. And that in some ways is a good thing. It enables you to perform at that high level. Mm. On the flip side, you are always compromising something.
Yeah.
To be, you know. So I think where you draw that line for you, you know, how balanced you want to be versus how much you want to invest in going down that sort of really specialist route. Mm. I think that's something that every individual is going to be in a different place on.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there's balance for health, for example, which is a different place from balance for being a top level competitor. So again, it very much depends on your goals. Now, I mean, we can talk about balance on a few, from a few different perspectives here. So you talk about balance biomechanically. So jiu-jitsu guys, we spend a lot of time using flexing muscle groups in general.
Yeah.
You know, forearm, finger flexors, trunk flexors. You know, we spend a lot of time sort of curled forwards into that ball position. And I think counteracting that by doing, I mean, as we've talked about, doing some strength work that focuses on the extensors. So, I mean, again, deadlifts would fit into this category. Again, when I start talking to people about fingers, I'll get them working the extensor muscle groups, the forearm, finger extensors, wrist extensors, to balance out the work that they're doing with the flexors. So I think you find that in terms of joint health, having strong muscle groups on both sides of the joint is the key to keeping that joint healthy. So from a biomechanical point of view, then you can look at energy systems, for example. And again, when you're looking at how people train, a lot of the time people spend, if you look at sort of high intensity training versus middle intensity training versus low intensity work, and looking at sort of how much people do of that through the week, a lot of the time you see people spending quite a lot of time in that middle zone.
Yeah.
Where sort of, and if you talk to strength and conditioning coaches, they'll refer to that as the gray area. That's where you don't want to be. Generally, in terms of sort of maximum benefits, you either want to be working at low intensity or high intensity.
Yeah,
because both of those things will give you different benefits, and you want to spend more of your time in the low intensity zone with high intensity work there as well.
Is that going to be a way that you can kind of track that monitoring? Is there going to be something like heart rate, which I know someone like Joel?
Yeah, I mean, this is something that, I mean, the technology has really improved recently, so it's definitely worth looking into, because you can get these heart rate monitors that store the heart rate data.
Yeah.
So at the end of the session, you can download it. I mean, I've got a Garmin one that I use sometimes. Yeah. So you can download your data for the whole session. You can see what your heart rate's been doing, how much time you've spent in each of those zones.
Mm.
And I mean, I think sometimes it's surprising when you do a jiu-jitsu session. I mean, I'll do a jiu-jitsu session these days, and you know, I'm not in peak competition shape right now, but it's sometimes surprising how hard you've worked in that session.
Yeah.
And then you see people doing that day in, day out through the week, and then they wonder why they're overtraining and they've not got any energy. You go, well, actually, maybe you need to put some low intensity days in rather than doing everything. You know, I always say that if you've got somebody who, if you're always training at 100%, you're never training at 100%. Because it's
impossible, isn't it?
Yeah. This is it. If you're going as hard as you can all the time, you never really hit your maximum because you're always one down. So,
is the volume that each that you'd spend in, say, high, like close to 100% versus low intensity, is that going to individual per based on the person?
To some extent, yeah. And I mean, the other thing is, it's something that you can improve on over time. So your body will adapt to what you do, but what people tend not to respond well to are sudden changes.
Yeah.
So particularly when you've got somebody who's had a couple of months off, for example, they've just gone back to training, they're super enthusiastic, they've got a competition coming up, they want to hit all the sessions in the week.
Yeah.
A lot of the time, that's where things will go wrong. You know, you've got fighters who've been out of camp, taking it easy, eating pizza on the sofa. Suddenly somebody offers them a fight, they're back in the gym. That's very often where we'll see the injuries and the illnesses start to come in, because it's that sudden change that the body's not ready for.
That was really what happened to Ricky Hatton a lot of the time, wasn't it? He'd go through ballooning, and it'd always affect his performance because he'd be spending half of his camp trying to get back to
weight. That's it, absolutely. I mean, this is a problem that you see with fighters a lot of the time, actually.
So. Yeah. So it's really the mentality is using the camp to peak ready for the fight, not as a time to be like, right, I'm going from 0 to 100. It's like, no,
that's it. You need to work going into that. I mean, what I always say to people, you need to gradually progress it. So, I mean, there's a general rule of thumb which says you shouldn't increase your loading by more than about 10% a week. And I mean, that's not an absolute figure, but it is a good general rule of thumb. I think that when you think about it that way, you kind of go, well, if I want to be here by fight time, let's work back from that. So if we go, you know, 10% increments, actually, I need to be starting over here. You know, I need to be at that level going into my 8 weeks in order to be here for the fight. Yeah. And sort of thinking about it from that point of view, it gives you a different perspective.
Yeah, very much so. Interesting. Okay, let's move on to the next question, because there's a few. this is from Josh. First one, he's having instability in his left knee after his meniscectomy. In 2 years since the surgery, is there anything you could do to help with that?
So, I mean, again, usual caveats apply. I can't do individual diagnosis, of course, because that's something that you need to speak to someone on an individual basis about. Yeah. But in general, what I'll look at with knees, particularly post-surgery, again, you've got your two main things is mobility and stability. So something you tend to see after knee operations, meniscectomies, that sort of thing, it's a bit of a loss of mobility. That can often have an effect, and that will then often sort of feed into the muscles not working as effectively because you're not managing to get that normal range, you're not getting that normal loading going on. So mobility, strength, and what I'll generally work on with people is building those back up, combining the two, obviously, you know, looking at those movement patterns, like we're talking about squats, trying to get that depth, for example, looking at your single leg work. So all of those things. When people talk about stability problems, I think it's important to try and understand where those stability problems come from. Mm-hmm. So you can have a stability problem because you haven't got the structural support. So maybe the ligaments are lax or something like that. But a lot of the time, what it can be is that the muscles aren't functioning effectively, or they're not firing effectively in the right places. So again, by working on sort of basic strength work through your full ranges of movement, and then building up to doing a bit more dynamic strength work. So what I'll often do when I'm rehabbing a knee is once people have got the movement back, they've got some basic strength, then we'll start going into the more dynamic movements. So things like jumps, landing, hops, direction changes, all of those things, which I think, again, are really important. And that often gets neglected out from the basic rehab. So that's something I will tend to look at with people.
Is that going to apply like across the board to a certain extent? So if you've got an elbow injury, it would be a similar sort of structure.
Yeah, development. Yeah, I mean, that's a basic process. So yeah. Again, we're looking at getting the mobility back, getting the strength back, and then getting the ability of those muscles to respond to what's going on around it, those external forces. And again, that's particularly important when you're looking at a contact sport like jiu-jitsu.
Okay, perfect. So the second one that Josh is asking is, he suffered a herniated disc, L5-S1 about 6 years ago, as a result has sciatica. Love sciatica. He now over the pain but still gets weakness mostly after high intensity training. Any suggestions?
Yeah, so I mean, again, disc injuries and lower backs is one of the standard things that I see a lot. Yeah. One of the things we want to look at is increasing that strength. People often get worried about lifting when they've had a back injury because they're worried that it's going to make it worse. And I always say to people, actually, not lifting is more dangerous because sooner or later you're going to put load on it, and especially in jiu-jitsu. And if your back isn't strong enough, that's when we tend to get the problems.
Yes.
So what I will do with something like that, we'll start by strengthening the spine in neutral position. So again, starting from where people are, what they can do safely at that point, and then gradually progressing it. Once we've got their spine strong in neutral, again, for jiu-jitsu in particular, we need to start reintroducing that flexion, so that bending forwards. And again, this is where sometimes your standard traditional rehab falls off the rails a little bit. Yeah. Because again, the old school thinking is flexion is bad.
Yeah.
And again, the problem with that is you are going to end up in a flexed position. And if you haven't trained to deal with that, if you haven't conditioned your back to deal with that, that's when you're going to get the problems. So what I'll start with is start by getting people doing some basic mobility work, getting the basic movement of flexion back. And then we'll very gradually, very carefully start putting some load on that. So I'll usually start with isometrics first because that's the safest way of doing it. It tends to be quite well tolerated. So we'll get people in a flexed position, just, you know, pushing back against hands or loading it lightly. Again, I've got various ways of doing that with bands or weights and things like that. Mm-hmm. And then we'll start getting them moving into and out of that position. Obviously with a very lightweight first, with something that their body can tolerate, and then just gradually progressing that.
Yes.
So that's the sort of thing that I would look at with disc injuries. But again, it's important to progress that on an individual basis with what that person can.
Of course. So the next one is Dan. He's asking about his LCL grade 3 tear. This is the guy that I said someone jumped guard on him. Really messed him up. I guess we kind of talked about a little bit with the squatting side of things in the previous question as well. But his question is actually the second part, which is important, is how long until he should get back into jiu-jitsu training?
Right. So with ligament reconstructions, it's particularly important to follow your surgeon's advice because it can vary depending on the details of the procedure. Yeah. So this is what I always say, get your surgeon's advice on how... because they should give you rehab guidelines, you know, how long is it until you can do all of these various things. And in the early stages with ligament reconstructions, you do need to protect that graft so that it can strengthen. So this is one of the places where I would say that you need to follow the guidelines rather than just going with how it feels.
Yeah.
It's sort of one of the exceptions to that general rule. I would tend to sort of follow the same basic rehab structure while sticking with those guidelines.
Yeah.
And I mean, usually with, ACL reconstructions are the ones that I'm more familiar with in terms of the people I've worked with myself. I mean, generally, they're looking at rehab of sort of somewhere between 6 and 12 months.
Wow. Okay.
Back. So, and that can vary from individual to individual. It can vary depending on how religiously someone does their rehab as well. You know, I mean, it's one of those things where if you do everything correctly, you can speed things up to a degree.
There's no general guidelines as to how quickly you get back into training. Then it is just solely down to the individual, surgeon's advice, physio advice.
I mean, I would, with that, I would always speak to the surgeon first of all. I mean, if I'm working with somebody who's had surgery, I will try and get the advice from the surgeon on the procedure that they've had and what they would like in terms of the rehab. I mean, I've got one lad who I've been working with a lot, actually. He had a bone graft, so it's a different procedure.
Yeah.
But I actually spoke to his surgeon and sort of talked through, right, what can he do? How long before he can do this? And he gave me the general guidelines. And then I went away and did the rehab plan mm-hmm. with him. And that worked really well because, again, okay. it's one of those things where it's a team effort. You need to have everyone on the same page with that.
Okay. Cool. I jumped past one. Jerome's asking just general advice on posture. Have you got anything? That's going to be a general one for most people, I think. Everybody's got terrible posture, me particularly.
I think the thing with posture, there's two things. People worry about when they're, for example, if they're sat in a chair, if you've got a day job, you sat in front of a computer for large amounts of time, everyone tends to end up a little bit like this, sort of hunched over. The problem tends to be the amount of time you stay there, rather than the position you're in. So I always say to people, you can have the best posture in the world. You can have, your perfect position, whatever that might be. But if you stay there for too long, you're still going to get problems.
Mm.
So any position you stay in for a prolonged period of time, what the body needs is movement.
Right.
I always say, I'm much more interested in whether somebody has mobility and they're able to get the range of motion they need for their everyday tasks and things like that. So with something like kyphosis, for example, what I'm looking at is the mobility. So trying to keep as much mobility and extension as possible, and also strengthening those muscles. Because again, if you've got quite a curve in your upper back, so you're hunched forward, those muscles are on stretch, which means they're already not going to be functioning quite as effectively as they would be in a sort of more neutral, quote unquote, position. So again, what I want to focus on is making sure that we're loading those muscles and that we're strengthening those muscles. So we keep as much strength as possible there. And I think a lot of the time when you do that, suddenly people feel a whole lot better. And actually the position of the spine, the thing is, we all have spinal curves, and they vary from one person to another. So some people have a more pronounced curve than others. Some people have a curve left to right, so a bit of a scoliosis. Most of the time, that doesn't affect us. Most of the time, our bodies can compensate and can adapt to that quite well. Sometimes it gets to the point where it becomes a problem. So usually what we're looking at doing is enabling the body to cope better with those variations.
Okay, cool. Sheldon's asking, he got knee barred a little while ago by a spaz, and he's got some instability issues. His advice to the physical therapist was do not do BJJ and judo and avoid sudden instabilities so the ligaments get time to heal. Oh my God, went back to, this is a long one. God, I didn't realize it was that long. But will strength training what are your recommendations for your approach on healing if you've been injured? And is strength and training something that's going to be beneficial to that? I think that's the kind of general gist of this question.
So strength training, yes, absolutely. So putting load on a joint, we know that for ligament healing,
yeah,
we need to be loading that joint. We need to be moving that joint. We need to be putting load on it. Otherwise, it won't heal as well as it can do. So the short answer to that is yes. Now, in terms of going back to jiu-jitsu, there are different schools of thought on this. My personal view is I would rather keep my guys on the mat as much as I can. The reason for that is if we stop someone training, what usually happens is they spend 3 months sat on the sofa watching Netflix. The pain goes away. They go back to training and they suddenly think they can pick up where they left off. And usually that's where things go wrong.
Yeah.
That's where you get these repetitive injuries that keep coming back. What I would rather do is keep that person training as much as possible and then gradually progressing what they're able to do.
Right. So,
in the early stage, you may need to limit what you're doing. So maybe stick to just drilling, or stick to drilling in positions that you can manage, or, you know, sitting things out if you can't do it, maybe avoid rolling and sort of gradually build yourself back up. The difficulty is when you've got a sport like jiu-jitsu, there is an element of unpredictability there. Yeah. And it's all very well saying just avoid the stuff that hurts. But the problem is, sometimes by the time it hurts, you've already done it. It's too late. And that's where, I mean, again, I think things like progressive drilling and learning how to grade your effort and how much force and intensity you're putting into something, that's really important. And again, that's something that I think people need to be learning when they're healthy, ideally, so that you can say, right, I'm going to go 40% or I'm going to go 60%. And you've got that, you can grade that intensity like that. And if you've got somebody who can do that, it's much easier to get them back on the mat than when you've got somebody who it's all or nothing. They're going or they've stopped, you know, they've got two gears. So I think, and I mean, again, we all know people who just can't roll light, and you know, I mean, I think it's something that a lot of us struggle with at times, but in terms of rehab, it's a really useful skill. And it's something that's very hard to learn when you're injured. It's something that you need to already be able to do, I think. But even then, like I say, what I'll usually do is by getting people back on the mat and trying to get them to restrict the position they're in or do a particular drill which it will challenge them, but not too much, and that sort of thing. So I'll try and keep them doing that, and then we can gradually expand what they're doing.
Yeah, it's very much kind of working around the injury, trying to aggravate it further.
And I mean, there are risks involved with that as well. You know, I mean, I think, but my feeling is, having worked with a lot of combat sports athletes, generally the people who do that tend to do better than the ones who just stop training altogether and then go back to it.
Yeah. Okay, cool. Well, I got a lot more questions, so I'm going to go for quick fire answers now, okay? we've already talked about that. Six most beneficial movements exercises to keep your body mobile.
Okay, so I came up with a list here. I mean, a lot depends on the individual, but if I'm going to pick six overall, I would go with some kind of hip bridge, hip thrust.
Okay.
Variation, a lunge or a split squat variation, some kind of hip hinge or Romanian deadlift type variation, a row, a horizontal row, a crawl, and a Turkish get up.
Okay, good, cool, excellent. No. Good quick fire responses, Rosie. I know you're on top of these. We've talked about that. Are flat feet problematic for grapplers? If so, how to remedy the fix?
They can be. People think of flat feet as a structural issue. I'm born with flat feet, it's genetic, whatever. I think a lot of the time, flat feet tend to be more functional. So part of the problem is our modern footwear, we tend to have these big padded trainers, which mean we don't use our foot muscles as much as maybe we would have done historically in evolutionary times. And because of that, I think a lot of the time we don't have that strength in our feet. So when suddenly you take your shoes off and you get on the mat, our feet aren't conditioned to walking around barefoot all the time. So what I'll often work with people is I'll work on foot muscle strength, I'll work on calf strength. So you calves, the front of the shin as well, muscles in there, and I'll also work on the hips. So I think weakness around the hips can also contribute to having a functional flat foot. And with those things, usually we can get on top of any symptoms. I mean, generally I say with these things, if you're not getting symptoms, it's probably not a problem. I mean, sometimes things can build up to the point where you get symptoms. But again, flat feet is one of these things that is a diagnosis people tend to come out with you go see a physio. I kind of go, oh, you've got one leg longer than the other, you've got a twisted pelvis, your feet are flat, you've got a scoliosis, almost anyone who's, you know, will come out with one of those things or a combination of those things, because most of us have some of those going on. The question is that a problem?
Yeah.
And I think that's the more difficult question.
Yeah.
So like I say, if somebody's got flat feet which are causing them issues, then those are the things that I would look at first.
Cool. That was kind of a quick answer.
I'm doing my best.
I know. You can talk more than I can. It's amazing. Which exercise is key to rehabilitating shoulder separation?
Shoulder separation. So again, I'm assuming we're talking about acromioclavicular separation here. So again, I would start by getting basic movement back. So basic mobility work, working into sort of overhead movements, gradually building that up. We want to look at scapulothoracic stability. So again, I'll get things like rows, basic crawls, that sort of thing. And gradually building up to more overhead work, which is that's likely to be later stage. Also, your basic rotator cuff rehab is going to come in there as well. So any of your, I mean, the standard shoulder rehab program really is going to be useful there.
Which I'm sure you're going to have very soon, right?
Yeah, that's next on my list.
Perfect. Which people in grappling do you... Which people in the grappling world do you look for inspiration? Information to relation to recovery, injury prevention, and rehabilitation?
Good question. There's lots and lots of people who I borrow ideas from. I think that's the great thing about ideas, is they sort of you pick up ideas from lots of different people, and generally we're sort of all developing all of the time.
Yeah.
If I'm to name names, John Will is somebody I find particularly useful to spend time with, because I love the way that he organizes his material and the way that he thinks about things in a structured way. And I found that quite useful in applying that to the way I think about rehab as well. So that's something. In terms of people who've been putting out rehab specific stuff, I know Stephen Kesting's been putting out some, which I quite like a few bits of his that I've seen. But like I said, there are lots of people I could mention in that bracket.
Okay, cool. I'm going to move on to, we've dealt with a little bit of the rotator cuffs anyway. Finger taping, does it work? Do you need to do it? Is pulling and twisting your fingers and making it pop a good or a bad thing?
So finger taping, if you've got an injury, absolutely, yeah, go ahead and tape it. I think it does provide some degree of protection. Make sure you're taking the tape off when you're not training. And I think it's important to keep mobilizing, keep that mobility going. So I'll get people taking the tape off, making sure that they're mobilizing, and strengthening the finger extensors as well. Those are things that I'll look at.
Have you tried those bands that go the opposite way?
Yeah. I love those. I work with climbing is my other sport, so I work with quite a lot of climbers. And again, I'll get them doing similar things, because you're working flexors so much that I think putting some balances through that's really important. So in terms of clicking your finger joints, somebody did a study on this recently, actually. There's this old wives' tale that if you click your finger joints, you'll give yourself osteoarthritis. There's no evidence for that.
Right.
For that. The most risky thing about clicking your finger joints is being punched in the face by the person next to you. aside from that, go ahead.
Feel free to. You'll be fine. Cool. We've looked at tight hips a little bit. Okay. Cross-facing, this comes on nicely to cross-face hard. I often get elevated scapular issues for the next 4 or 5 days when I turn my neck. You get smashed quite a bit. What exercises, if anything, do you think can help?
Yeah, so this is sort of a standard grappling neck issue, and I see these all the time. So what I've started doing is giving people a basic neck strength program.
Right.
So, as with most of these things, I will typically start with isometrics. So I'll start really easy, just getting people pushing their head against the hand, side to side, backwards, lying on a bench, tucking your chin in, holding the head just slightly over the bench or even over the end of the bench. Mm-hmm. That's quite a good way of working the muscles on the front of the neck. So I think that can make a really big difference. And then from there, I this kind of comes on to my next thing, which is I've put together a program of strength exercises.
Lovely segue, isn't it?
these are the ones that I tend to use with the grapplers and the fighters that I see in clinic. Yeah. And I find that they work really well for those guys. So that's the video that we've put together. So if you're interested in that, check out our website, Combat Sports.
I'll post the link as well below, don't worry.
Pardon?
I'll put the link below as well. It'll be the program. I'm guessing that you're going to put together a lot of these different programs, so it can be almost like pick and choose. I've got a knee issue. These are going to be some things that can help you with that knee issue.
Yeah. So I mean, what we're working towards is, like I say, I started with necks because I mean, necks is a particular one that I've got a soft spot for because I have a neck injury. Yeah. So it's something that I've spent a lot of time thinking about, trying to keep myself away from the surgeons. Yeah. And I've come up with some things which I think work really well. So this is what I'm putting out there. But the plan is to then go, I mean, I've got a lot of thoughts about lower back rehab that's specific for grapplers, for fighters, shoulder rehab, knee rehab. So like I say, we're planning a series of these. Yeah. And we're going to be looking at getting those up there.
Yeah, that's an incredibly useful resource for anybody. I know it's the stuff that's not particularly fun, which makes it hard, but it's just so important for like your longevity. It's frustrating, but it's one of those things that you just have to do. And I think having someone who's in the jiu-jitsu world doing it as well will make such a big difference. It'll be so.
I mean, one of the things that I try and do is make it as specific as I can. Yes. To the sport. So we don't just do gym exercises. So I mean, I cover the basic exercises, but then I'll also start looking at jiu-jitsu specific positions and situations and get people drilling in those positions as well. So I mean, this is something that I look at on the video, actually, is sort of how you can cross over, take those isometrics out of the gym and, or you know, out of the rehab room. Nice. And in onto the mat. So one of the things that I suggest is getting people warming up by doing a basic guard drill where you're sort of keeping your head in the middle and guard. Yeah. And the other person's trying to stuff the head and you're resisting that. So again, it's on the one hand, it's a neck strength exercise. On the other, you're also looking specifically at that position. So it immediately becomes more relevant to what you're doing.
Yeah, no, that's sounds great in terms of, I'm always looking for things like that as an instructor that I can take into my classes and be like, well, I know this is also helping you. It's not just about developing your jiu-jitsu, it's about developing everything else around it as well. So if it's like neck strength, sure, or any of those things.
And again, it makes it more palatable. So, you know, it's like hiding the vegetables in the pasta sauce.
Yeah. It is exactly like that. Okay, perfect. Rosie, I think that's all I've got time for anyway, unfortunately. But thank you for talking to me. I learned a lot and I really appreciate your time.
Brilliant. It's been fun. It's been fun. We should do it again sometime.
Absolutely, Rosie. Next time for sure. I'll talk to you soon. Bye-bye.
Bye.